Hey everybody, it's Jim Mallard here. Welcome to the Mallard Report. The Mallard Report is recorded in front of a live virtual audience on the Duck Pond. Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, live. Mallard.com. M-A-L-L-I-A-R-D.com. One more thing before we start. Let me turn it over to my friend that you may know from Ancient Aliens and the Curse of Oak Island and many other things, Robert Clotworthy.
On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group. On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group.
Want to welcome everybody in this evening. I hope everybody's well, staying warm. I this is funny because last week everybody was so happy. It was so warm in Pennsylvania. And now I've got a freeze warning on my phone, so I'm not exactly sure. It must be spring. Okay. My guest tonight is Dr. Donna Marks. She is a author, consultant, public speaker, psychotherapist, and addiction counselor for, I'll say decades. I don't need to give her age away. Donna has written a new important book, The Healing Moment, where she shares the 7 paths to healing and recovery. Welcome, Dr. Marks, to the Mallard Report. How are you doing tonight, Donna?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
So, 7 paths. So, I obviously don't want to give your whole book away, but I do want to give some of it away. So, give me a little bit more about the book, because I want to start there, because I have an interesting conversation I want to dive into a little bit later. So, for those people who have been following this train of shows, that I will get to that in a little bit, but first we're going to talk about your book.
Anything in particular or just general?
I want to talk about social media and addiction, but we'll get into that in a little bit. Let's start with the book first.
So we're talking about the Healing Moment book. We have
yes
books out right now. Okay, so I just got confused for a second. So
that's okay.
The book is really about helping people to go inward for their answers. We've been so conditioned to be programmed and either through, you know, the various sources in the media or through religion or through all kinds of messaging. And I think we've become very confused. And what I'm conveying in the book is that we all have an inner voice that we can listen to. And that voice is our guide through life. And when we listen to that voice, no matter what we've done or what we're going through or what our future holds, we can make right decisions. And even when we make mistakes, like so many of us do, it's just a natural part of life, that we can use that voice to turn any type of mess we've made or any type of traumatic experience that we're in or going through into a miracle. And the book talks about the 7 paths that lead you to that place of miraculous happiness.
So I'm a bit confused because people have been going to you for years for help, and now you're telling people to trust themselves. So it sounds like a direct conflict of interest, if I'm not wrong.
Well, I see what you're saying. You know, you do go to people to learn how to do things that you might already know how to do, because we don't really listen. And so when we learn to, as a therapist, let's say, if someone comes to me, I will help them to discern which voice they're listening to. Are they listening to the fear-driven part of themselves, or are they listening to the part of themselves that wants to guide them in the directions that will benefit them most, not just them, but the people that they love as well?
So out of the 7 paths, it sounds kind of complex, but I'm assuming each one has their purpose or suits the person?
Yes. You know, we're always searching. My biggest message in the book is we're always searching, and yet we are in charge of ourselves, and I want us to take our power back. So instead of, you know, let's just take one path, which is the path of trust. And people are feeling betrayed, they're feeling deceived, they're feeling that they've made mistakes. And so once we know, though, that we can trust ourselves to recover no matter what happens to us, no matter how badly we're hurt, we can heal if we use our own healing tools, which allowing ourselves to grieve, allowing ourselves to go through that process of letting go, and allowing ourselves to forgive, we can heal. And once we learn that we can trust ourselves to be able to recover no matter what happens to us. That is part of the path of self-trust. The other part is to be trustworthy. When you know that you are trustable, it's much easier to trust others. But there are people who aren't trustworthy. And when we don't make decisions based on fear and we make those decisions based on love and we listen to that voice, we're a lot less likely to make mistakes when it comes to trusting other people. You know, people say, I should have listened to my gut, or I knew it wasn't, something was off, or, you know, if other people weren't supporting this person, why was I doing it? So there's always signs, but we don't pay attention to them. So trust, the chapter on trust addresses these kinds of things of learning to trust that gut, that inner voice, I call it, and to be able to know that even when we do make a mistake of trusting the wrong people, that we will recover from it. We will heal.
What if the internal voice is telling you two different things? Because when I'm doing the show, there's all these like, okay, we're doing video tonight. Like for years, I said, well, I won't say what I said, but you can get the idea. There was a 4-letter word followed by no. But now tonight I've kind of, well, not tonight, the last couple months, I've slowly started to embrace it. So what about that internal conflict? Because there are times where obviously it's the right thing to do because these kids these days are watching more YouTube than ever, but yet my voice says no. How do we wade through that?
Well, your voice said no video.
Yeah. But I know it. My mind knows it's the right thing to do, right? Because
okay, like so that's the two voices. Yes, that's the two voices I'm talking about. The voice that said no was the voice of fear because you didn't want to do video because?
Well, because I've got the face for radio, maybe? No.
You didn't want to be seen?
Well, I mean, there are nights that I don't want to be seen, you know, and there are times that, there's obstacles and, you know, it's hard to come across when you're listening and taking notes and, you know, it just sometimes feel disheveled if you're not, because then people are like, well, he wasn't paying attention because he was writing something or he was on his phone, you know, all these little chirps that you can get from people.
So that boy, Sophia, was afraid of being judged or that you wouldn't look right or professional enough or good enough or shaved enough or presentable enough and all this negativity. And yet, you know, that people want to see faces because they relate. They relate. And so if you haven't shaved, that's cool. He's just being real tonight. Or, you know, he's taking notes. He's really into it. I mean, we cannot possibly get everybody to like you if you came perfect on the set every single time, you know, so it doesn't really matter. There will be people who will really hang on and appreciate you. And there will be people who won't. And, you know, you're speaking to the ones who want to receive your message. So you did the right thing by listening to that voice that said, go for it.
Well, that's good. That's what I like to hear. But I mean, obviously we get hundreds of those decisions a day where we could do one thing or the other. So how do we start? You say listening to that inner voice, but like I said, there's always that other voice that's kind of nagging you.
What's the choice between the two voices, the one of fear or the one of love? The fear is always the aggressive voice. It's the loud voice, and it's the wrong one. It's the voice that will talk you into doing the wrong thing and then beat you up for doing it. You know, it'll say, don't turn on your video. And then when your competitors are getting all the numbers, and the one main key is that they've got the video is you're going, that same voice that said, don't do the video, will say, you stupid idiot, you should have had video on all these past 2 years, you would have had better numbers. So that's that very aggressive, loud voice. It wants immediate gratification. It doesn't want to try and work things out. It doesn't want to listen to the other voice. The other voice is saying like, what the one that said, you know, have the cameras is saying, you know, everyone's watching. They want to see you. So let them relate to you. You don't have anything to fear or hide. Get out there and be seen.
So I hope other people are out there taking that to whatever they're applying to. I just had to bear the brunt of this for me. Okay. So you mentioned you have other books out. You have two or three out. I meant to write them all down, but I got into it, and then my mind started to swirl because there's so many different little streets that I wanted to go off them. So go ahead and give me the full promotion of what you got out there.
Well, we released Exit the Maze, One Addiction, One Cause, One Solution last December. It's doing very well. and The Healing Moment, Seven Paths to Turn Messes into Miracles. And then a few years ago, before I had a publisher, I wrote a book called Learn, Grow, Forgive, A Path to Spiritual Success. And that book is about, you know, it doesn't really matter how many mistakes you make. You can learn and grow from them. You know, we say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. And I say that's really not insane to do the same thing over and over again. Most people will repeat their mistakes, but it's not insane if you're growing and learning and digging deeper, you know, and really getting, you know, juicing it, I say, really juicing those mistakes so that you're expanding, shrinking your ego, shrinking your sense of whatever is blocking you in life and expanding. But you have to be able to forgive yourself and other people.
Which is interesting because it is hard to forgive other people at times because they've did you wrong, whatever the wrong was. So how do you start that process of forgiving somebody that did something that is quote unquote unforgivable?
Right. Well, that's one of the chapters in the book. And I even give an example of a woman whose daughter was murdered. That's certainly an unforgivable type of thing. So she did have to go through a very painful process. One of the things that I talk about in forgiveness is that at the root, we often blame ourselves. In this case, she was like, you know, inadvertently and covertly blaming herself. I told her not to be on that street corner. I begged her not to ever hang out there. And so part of her was saying if she could have controlled her daughter better, she wouldn't have been shot on that street corner. There was other layers involved in that too, in terms of, you know, how she, you know, she could have been not been a single mom. She could have raised her differently, things like that. But then there's forgiving the person who shot her, which took a little bit more time. And sometimes people just have to really go through those grieving stages of being outraged, of being in so much pain, crying and embracing that loss. And then we do get to the point of acceptance, and we do get to the point that this isn't something that you rush through, but the end result is that you can even have compassion for someone who hurt or harmed you and find meaning in the experience.
Do you have to forgive yourself for all those negative thoughts first before you forgive the other person, though?
I think having negative thoughts is a very, very normal process of trauma when someone's gone through a lot of trauma. And I'm using that word now because you said the unforgivable. So there's minor traumas. Anytime there's betrayal, anytime someone has taken advantage of someone, someone who's deliberately hurt someone who's dismissed or disregarded the value or worth of another, or what someone actually is entitled to, like honesty and trust in a relationship, there's going to be a certain amount of trauma. And yes, you know, forgiving ourselves and the other person is possible, but it's only not normal to go through a lot of negative emotions getting to that place. In fact, if you don't allow yourself to purge those negative emotions, you probably won't get to the place of forgiveness.
Interesting, because I know there's a lot of people out there that carry that with them, or, well, I guess carry it with them. I can't say or. They just held that resentment or that anger or whatever it may be for years, which is, I agree with you. It's hard. Once you get rid of it, your life's a lot better.
Right. And it's like carrying around suitcases full of rocks and dragging them with you wherever you go. You know, you drag them to bed, you drag them to work, you drag them through every single relationship, because here's this wall, you know, this wall of suitcases full of rocks, but you, by God, you have to carry those around with you because they protect me. You know, I'm not going to get hurt again. And you're hurting yourself every single moment of every single day with that wound that you continue to carry. We are designed that we can heal. All you have to do is look at any child. A child gets sad, they cry, and then they go, oh, can I go out and play now? You know, even when something terrible happens to them, as long as they're allowed to process that emotion, they get over it. They heal. They need the support. They need the nurturing, and they need to be told it's okay. So many children aren't getting that message. And so they grow up bottling it all in, holding it all in. Same thing with anger. A child gets angry, they get it out. They have to be taught how to find words for their anger and not throw things or hit people and things like that. But once it's out, then the anger can dissipate. Then they can go to the next level of learning how to resolve conflicts within themselves and with others. So these are basic tools that so many of us lack. And so that's why we carry that hurt around, because we don't know what to do with it. And then by the time they do come into my office, they say, I don't want to feel that. Why? What? One woman stopped therapy because she started crying. In the first session, she started crying about her first boyfriend. And she had never cried before. And she's like, why am I crying about this? She got so upset and she wouldn't come back in. And, you know, it's really sad, because it's okay to cry. We're supposed to cry. And she wasn't really able to ever meet anybody else because she still had that in her heart. And so when we allow ourselves to cry and release, then we open up those painful places to new life and to joy and to peace.
Which, I'll speak for myself, I know it's difficult for myself at times to process emotions, especially cry and just kind of allow that sorrow to happen. Just because that, you know, there's that stereotypical thing that, you know, Western Pennsylvania, grew up as a, you know, young man. So you just don't show those emotions in front of people and you know, deal with it later. So I understand what you're talking about, how it can be difficult to accept those emotions, deal with those emotions in the moment, let alone wait 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years to try to start processing it. So
yeah, it's harder for me.
Maybe I should sit up for a minute.
Yeah, well, we cover it up with laughing, yeah, or, you know, self-medicate in a million other ways. But it's for men who have been taught, you know, what are you, a sissy, or, you know, get a grip, or I'll give you something to cry about, or, you know, cut that out right this minute. You really learn to shut off your feelings. And that's sad, because they really don't go away. They just get packed away and stowed away. And then you carry it with you. So what I try to teach men, and I've worked with probably more men than women over the years, is that, you know, just start off by just when you feel that immediate, you know, emotion, just kind of close your eyes and be with it. You don't have to worry about crying or anything else. Just kind of give yourself permission to feel like it's perfectly normal and healthy for a boy or a girl to feel. Otherwise, boys would be born without that part of their brain and mind, and girls would be. So we both feel, and it's perfectly healthy and natural to do that. Now, I don't think it really serves either sex to just be bursting out in tears all the time, although a lot of people will do that for a short period of time when they've been bottled up for their whole life. But to you know, we're doing a better job now with you know, healthy parenting and giving permission. You know, it's okay to be sad, telling boys it's okay to be sad. And at the same time, you know, learning how to be strong, but it's not weak to be sad. There's strength in allowing yourself to feel your emotions. And it's very healthy. We have another problem now with young people not feeling at all, because they're so programmed electronically, and they're not even engaging in situations that evoke much emotion other than aggression or winning or stimulation. And so that's a whole new set of baggage for younger people. So that really needs to be balanced out. I'm not saying electronics are bad. In fact, they have the value of developing sensory motor development and teaching kids to think quickly and things like that. But there should definitely be balance, you know, being outside, playtime and fresh air and sunshine and having friends over and playing games, you know, real games, on board games and card games and tag and war and stuff like that. It's really good to have that kind of balance.
Yeah, for over the last few weeks, I've been talking about technology, and then I've got into AI a little bit. And last week we talked about AI in schools and how, which, you know, your traditional high school essay kind of looks very different now, because you've got all these chat bots that can write stuff for you. And even the other day I think it was Snapchat that rolled out the AI friend that you could have, and it'll talk to you all the time. And it's like, I've seen all these ads for apps, you know, and now you hear about people saying, ask the bot to write your answer to your girlfriend so you don't get in trouble. And I'm like, uh-oh. Yeah. Now we're in trouble, because if we're not emotionally, that's why I was glad to have you on, because this all kind of came as we've been layering down through this. And I'm like, well, if we're replacing my genuine, whatever, bad, good, indifferent answer with something that has been filtered and wrote to sound whatever, later on when I actually go to talk to this person and whatever spews out of my mouth does not match whatever I said via text weeks, days earlier, that's going to cause a lot of problems in relationships.
Well, that's one problem. The other problem is the feeling of deception that someone would have that they're getting a robot instead of a human being. And so I think there was a really good movie. I don't remember the name of it. Joaquin starred in it. He fell in love with a robot on his phone, artificial intelligence.
I'm sure somebody will have the name for us here in a few minutes.
It was really good. I mean, he literally bonded with this voice because she was the perfect woman. And then, you know, it ended poorly because he had to face the reality that she wasn't only the perfect woman, she wasn't alive at all. And she was just programmed, and she had thousands of people that were in love with her, so to speak. He wasn't exclusive. And you know, this is some of the problem we're going to face with artificial intelligence. And also that we're not thinking when you can just push a button and it writes the perfect term paper, or I guess it could be handy for research, but you know, we're getting further and further away from using our minds, and that will make us like robots in itself. And we don't want to do that. Being a human being is a wonderful, beautiful experience. If we're having problems with it, we need some coaching and some help on how to appreciate it and how to do it differently so that we can enjoy ourselves. One of the things I talk about in this book is that we're not here to medicate ourselves, to zone out, to shut down, to isolate, to be miserable. We're here. We all have a purpose. We all have meaning. And we're here to love and to laugh and to play and to contribute. And so when we're doing those things, we get along really well. And we do have our ups and downs, of course, but it's mostly ups and few downs, and we recover from those downs. But when we're stuck in some kind of unconscious behavior and mindset, we are not very happy. And a robot is never going to satisfy that need for fulfillment.
So Germantown Runner pops in. It was her. The title of the movie. It was released in 2015.
Right. Thank you
so much. yeah, that's that interaction, that real-time interaction that people need, because otherwise we would have been up the creek without the paddle. But
a human being gave us the answer. How nice.
He said it was a good movie, but a little creepy. And I get the feeling that he's probably right, because, I mean, that was supposed to be futuristic, and here we are less than 10 years later. Or maybe 10 years later, either way, seeing that as a very real possibility, which blows my mind, because what is science fiction anymore? But that's a whole different conversation for another day.
Yeah.
But so as the world has evolved into this Facebook world, what have you noticed some of the biggest, I don't want to say problems, but changes with people as we become more networked, but less together? Is that fair?
You know, it's a perverse answer. Okay, we're more together and less related, so less connected, and we're not forming these kinds of attachments that are so important in life. Like you go do things with people, and you have dinner with people, or breakfast, and cards, and special interests, and backgammon, or you know, golfing, or what. There's just so much social media, hours and hours and hours. And one of the real dangers is that people hurt each other on there, especially young people. It's a very serious, the mean people syndrome, I call it, you know, where someone talks about someone openly about another person, and that person is so deeply hurt, especially at a young age. We're very fragile. We don't have those protective defenses yet. And like we do when we're older, hopefully And it's it can be very tragic. And kids are, you know, we were hearing all the time, kids are actually becoming very depressed. Some of them are ending their lives. And that's really a lack of reality is contributing. It's all this negativity that they're believing, and they don't have the outlet of, you know, tribe friends that they go do things with and say, oh, don't pay attention to that, or stay off of there, you know, hang out with us. It could be a very trying thing for a young person to go through that. So that's part of the problem. And then we're trying to get all this affirmation off of social media. If I tell people, if you want to be on it, make a contribution. Don't try to get something back from it. I mean, if you're marketing, that's one thing. But I mean, don't try to get your self-esteem off of social media. Be a contributor to help other people feel good. Then you can keep it into perspective.
Ooh, that's good. I'm a marketer. Whoops, shameless promotion sometimes. But I don't go there looking for, like you're saying, the affirmations, the feel good, the whatever, because odds are it's not there. I mean, you'll find the mean person 9 times out of 10 if you look for them hard enough. Of course, I stopped looking for them years ago because, like you, it's just kind of like, okay, whatever. Try to ruin my day. Try her. But the good stuff, it's also hard to find good stuff out there. I mean, just in general. So you have to find it within yourself and give it to other people.
Yes, that's one approach. But our look for the good stuff, if you're going to be on social media or on the internet. And there's plenty of good stuff available, like your show.
Well, thank you. Okay. Now, how do we, I'm always interested in, because I've got, oh God, I've got 2 teenagers at home. Just, again, that always hits me hard now because, you know, it just happened a couple months ago. How do we make sure as
just
parents?
Just having them a couple months ago or?
No, well, just that she turned 13 a couple months ago. So now it's 2 teenagers.
And your little girl got hijacked.
Yeah, like, oh, when did that happen? right? Like, oh, no, they've been here for years, but when did that happen?
Right.
How do we make sure that we're doing the best we can by them in this digital mess that we live in today?
I actually have a YouTube video where I'm talking to a 13-year-old young man, and I love working with teenagers because they are so clear. And what happens often with parents, they don't value how wise they are. They see things much clearer than adults most of the time. And they haven't yet entered the world of disillusion and illusionment, I call it. And so when you can just ask questions, whatever you're worried about, you can just say, hey, how do you feel about this? Or what do you think about that? And they'll tell you, and then you can affirm it. Like, that's a really good way of looking at that. For example, fentanyl is on everyone's mind. And you could say, you know, like, what are you going to do if you're at a party and someone pulls out a drug, you know, like a pill or, you know, have you heard? I mean, what do you think about this fentanyl thing? And they'll tell you what they think. They're very aware of what's going on. Or even if they say, I don't know, say, you know, I hear it. Is it true? I mean, maybe the news is overrating it. Like, what do you hear at school? You know, and what do you think about it? What do you feel about this? And they will tell you if they feel safe and you don't interrupt them and you let them express themselves, they will tell you, and you find out your kids are very smart. I was working with one family one time, the kid, he was like less than a teenager, and he put signs all over the house, no smoking, no drinking, little paper signs all over the house, because that's what his parents were doing too much in his opinion. And he wound up drinking and smoking and drugging too much as an adult. That's what I mean. Before they become delusional themselves, they're very clear. But really just taking the time to pull out what they already know and then affirm them. You know, you can say things like that is, I am so impressed. I wish I would have, you know, had my head on that straight when I was younger. I wish I would have been able to think like you're thinking right now. How do you feel about it? How do you feel about a robot or artificial intelligence writing a paper for some of the kids and the other kids are, you know, having to really research it and write it on their own? What do you think of that? You know, that kind of stuff. And they will tell you. They don't volunteer the information, but they will tell you, and they will feel very respected and very valued when you affirm that they have a good head on their shoulders. And so many kids do. Even kids who've been traumatized still know the truth, and they will be able to talk about it.
What about those kids that have been traumatized? I mean, they're all in everybody's life, if they know it or not. How do we help them? I mean, I don't necessarily want to have them tell me all their problems and all their baggage, but I mean, how do we be better humans towards them so they can, if they want to, you know, work through that, but not, like I said, I don't want to necessarily say, well, I know you've went through this, that, and the other. Now we're going to sit here and talk about it, but just help them understand that there are adults out there that aren't going to harm them.
Yeah. My youngest daughter often brought her, she knew I'd gone through a lot of trauma in my childhood, and that, I don't regret any of it because it helped me to be a better therapist. And I, one of the things I talk about, you know, the messes in my life really got turned into a lot of wonderful miracles. And the biggest miracle is being able to help others. But my daughter used to bring people home who she was worried about, you know, and we just kind of sit around talking. And then, you know, a child will say something, or you can have your daughter. Do you have a daughter and a son?
Yep.
Yeah, might bring it up, or but they'll open up. They usually will. You could, you know, you don't just launch right into it, but just kind of ease into it. And you maybe talk about somebody else that's going through something, and then they'll open up. I went through that kind of thing. I think the most important message that we can give a child that's gone through trauma, not to try and take the responsibility of it or fix it, but to validate that must really be painful. And if you think that they're in danger, you know, physically, sexually, they're in a violent environment or something, then you might want to consider some type of intervention. But you better be sure, because you don't want to just go marching into somebody's family as some kind of righteous warrior. And it may not necessarily be warranted. But in most cases, just validating that that's really difficult to go through. And you don't, you know, you can maybe talk to your school counselor. There's plenty of help available. There's plenty of places you can go. But don't carry this around, and don't internalize it that this is your fault. Sometimes parents go through their own stuff and they make a lot of mistakes, and they don't realize they're making the mistakes. They don't realize they're reenacting their own trauma. They don't realize they have a substance abuse problem. They don't realize they're saying and doing all the wrong things that are very hurtful and harmful to you. That doesn't justify it, but it does mean that it's not your fault that it's happening.
So Shifting Gears brought to you by evergreenpodcast.com. Shifting Gears brought to you by evergreenpodcast.com. Let's talk about addiction for a little bit. I understand it's very powerful, and once you're in it, it's hard to get back out of. But my first question to you is addiction like an inherited trait, or is it a learned trait, or is it just something that happens?
Well, obviously, if there's a family history, you would be more susceptible. And what they're teaching us now is that addiction is a brain disorder. And I violently react to that. I don't believe that all these people that are suffering addiction, which is almost everybody either knows someone who has an addiction or is addicted. And when I talk about addiction, I'm not talking about drugs and alcohol. I'm talking about, as I say in the other book I mentioned earlier, there's one, it's that invisible hole. And it'll seek out anything: gambling, porn, sex, love, relationships, shopping, you name it, you know, cigarettes. There's just no end to the search. So that's why treatment doesn't work, because, you know, you get treated for one addiction and you leave treatment and you engage in another. And so it's, you know, until we recognize that void has to be filled with something other than addiction. And I teach people literally how to replace every addiction with self-love, so they can learn how to love themselves, which is a whole nother conversation. But I don't believe it's a brain disorder. I don't believe that all these babies that are born all the time are born with brain disorders. I just don't believe that. That makes no sense at all. If they have addiction in their family history, chances are they will be more susceptible. But I believe that babies are born perfect. Of course, I understand that some babies have birth defects. I understand that. But even babies with birth defects, you can look on the internet and you can see people who have severe birth defects, no arms and legs, being motivational speakers and making a lot of money and being happily married and making a contribution on the planet. So they're not addicts. So let's get a grip here. I think that what happens with addiction is the addiction dysregulates your brain. And as your brain, as the, whether it's sugar or drugs or nicotine or just that intensity, you know, video games and all these other things, your brain literally gets affected by all that and becomes dysregulated. So once the person learns how to eat healthy, exercise, stop putting toxins in their bloodstream and in their brain, and learns how to feel their feelings in healthy ways, like we were talking about earlier, regulate their emotions, that brain becomes perfectly healthy. Just like when you quit smoking, your lung becomes nice and pink again, if you haven't done too much damage to it. Once you cross a certain line, it is irreparable, but our body and our organs are extremely resilient. And so they will heal. And it's not a popular, everybody's saying now it's a brain disorder. They don't use addiction at all in the diagnostic manuals. It's, you know, this disorder and that disorder. And I think that's very troubling, because if you have a brain disorder, then you have to treat addiction with addiction. And so many people now are being treated with addiction, with pills, and with pills that are very hard to come off of. I've seen people, they can't get off of the pills. They go through hell getting off the pills. This does not make sense to me at all.
So I'm going to make you scream at me here now, which is perfectly fine because I want you to. Okay, maybe not, but okay. Is there such a thing as a healthy addiction? Like, because, you know, you hear about the runner's high and, you know, all these other things. Is that possible? Or is that just kind
of a marathon? As a person who ran some marathons, I know that high. It's a nice high. It's a good, healthy high. The difference between an addiction and doing something a lot is that there's negative consequences. So if someone, we have a couple people here where I live, they must run 10, 12 miles every day. They don't eat and they look like skeletons out there running around. That is an addiction to exercise, and that is not healthy. But someone who's training for a marathon and it's age appropriate and they're eating healthy and their life is great and they like that natural endorphin high, that's and they're okay if they miss a day of running, they're not freaking out over it, you know, then there's no negative consequence, so it wouldn't be an addiction.
So whatever the addiction may be, we'll use running for the example here, those bad case people, because that way it doesn't offend anybody. Okay, so I don't have a running problem, but person X has a running problem. How, I mean, once they have admitted the problem, I mean, I think we're all familiar with the 12 steps that the Alcoholics Anonymous use. Is that kind of the course of path that people should be taking, or is there something better, more modern?
Well, it depends on how far along the addiction has progressed. I happen to think that the recovery programs are wonderful. I've done a lot of personal investigation. And I won't say which recovery programs I belong to, but I've tried most of them, and I've had a lot of different addictions myself. So that's why I came to the realization that there's just one. And once you get the right kind of help, you don't need to be addicted anymore, and you can have a very productive and happy life. I feel like I one of my blogs is, you know, addiction is a blessing in disguise. And I believe that because I think it takes you places that you wouldn't go otherwise in terms of personal growth and spiritual development and having a really strong self-examination on an ongoing basis. And it makes us better people, and we give back too. So it has all the components of really good mental health. They're not perfect. There's 12-step programs or smart recovery. There's therapy, there's inpatient treatment, outpatient treatment. I have a concierge practice. I had a regular psychotherapy practice for most of my career, but the past 3 years I've had a concierge practice. So I actually take people to meetings and do about 30 hours of therapy a week, and they involve the whole family or the whole business group or whoever they want to include in that process. So there's free help, like through 12 steps and smart recovery and other types of meetings like that. Or there's very expensive treatment. It just depends on the needs, what the person can afford. And I can't say that one is necessarily any better than the other.
You just read my mind. I was going to say, is there, a cookie cutter method that works, or is it? You've mentioned spiritual journey several times, so I think it's probably up to the person. Is that what I'm supposed to assume here?
Is it up to the person?
Because if it was cookie cutter, it was easy. You'd be telling me that person needs to do X, Y, and Z, but it seems like there's multiple options for everybody.
There are different options. So not everybody wants to go to a treatment center or a recovery meeting. And especially people who are, it's very important to them to remain private. But most people would get, in my opinion, as much benefit from going to a 12-step meeting after, if they have a substance abuse problem, after they've detoxed, they will get as much or more out of that than most treatment. And it's safer because they're not going to put you on medication in those meetings.
Which medication, that's a whole other topic for another show. It seems that, how do I say this nicely? Because I don't want to upset any potential sponsors that may have a pill. There's too many of them. There we go.
Representing people that are selling nutrients, you know, and amino acids and vitamins.
I have some magical oil too. We can't disregard that either. Boy, this is the worst segue in the history of radio here. Tell people about your website, where they can find your books and all that other stuff.
Well, my website's Dr. Donna Marks, DonnaMarks.com. And my books are actually on the website, but they're also on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. The Simon Schuster website has them. And you can go to any bookstore and they will order it because Simon Schuster is distributing the book. And I think that pretty much covers all the places that you could get the books.
Which is great. I mean, that's a great option to have out there. Especially for those people, another form of addiction, right? The need for the paper book, let alone the digital e-reader anymore.
Maybe that's not a bad thing. Personally, I read The 7 Habits of Successful People years ago. And one of the things he said was, you know, people who are successful are always reading books. And I'd already been reading books. That's why I read his book, but Stephen Covey. But I always have a stack of books by my bed. I read in the morning, I read at night. And, you know, it's not like a project. You know, it's like one or two pages of two or three books. And before you know it, those are done, and that one's done, you bring in another. And it keeps your mind engaged and learning and growing and active. And I think that's really important. And it's a nice little ritual, you know, getting the book and turning the pages and thinking about it stimulates your
four pages of two or three different books. My head just hurts. I'd be lost.
You might be surprised. I mean, if they're all the same subject, but if they're different subjects, you might be surprised. You know, we compartmentalize all the time. So why not compartmentalize something positive?
Okay. I may have to try it just to take your word. I'll take your word for it and try it, but no promises though, because sometimes I forget it's Tuesday, right? Okay. So we've kind of delved through the bad of the world today with all the internet and all this other stuff, but there has to be some good that comes from this besides us being able to talk tonight. Is there any good out there?
I think the internet is wonderful. I mean, when it's working, I mean, it's fantastic that, you don't have to wait till you get home to get your messages. It's fantastic that you don't have to drive to a library to go through some encyclopedias to get some information or buy a whole set of books on encyclopedias, that you can find anything at your fingertips. It is a wonderful opportunity. There's all kinds of meet and greet groups and social interests. And I think people find things that they would not find through a phone book in the past. And so, it's just wonderful in so many ways. You can get reviews. You can make reviews. You can find anything in the world. You can find it on the internet. And so it's a wonderful opportunity for information.
As long as you're looking for the right information and getting the right
kind of that you recognize that you may be getting some biased information at times too. So you surf different sources to kind of find the middle ground there of what's really going on.
that can be hard to do, especially like when you're out. I hate the self-help title, right? Because, you know, if I could help myself, I wouldn't be looking for self-help.
Because oh, that's interesting.
It's always annoyed me. So
yeah, that's standard. What would you call it? Help?
I don't know. Help, yeah.
The help thing, section.
Things you should know, but you already did, obviously don't. No.
I like but there's that. The help section.
Yeah, there's so much though, right? You can get overloaded because you're talking about affirmations and all this other stuff, and you can really get lost in trying to make yourself feel good. And I don't know, I don't know, what am I looking for here?
When I was self-helping, I love bookstores. I really love bookstores. And you know, it's so much fun now because they have coffee shops and stuff like that. And you sit there and kind of grab a few and peruse and then pick the one you want while you have your coffee or your tea or whatever. And so kind of, you know, you can ask like this, I'm looking for a book on personal growth or spirituality or whatever, where do I go? And just kind of look around at the covers and see what, you know, look at the back where it tells you what it's about. And you'll know, something will speak to you. And like I said, sit down with it, read the intro or look through the table of contents. And if it's, you know, sometimes I'll go, eh. And sometimes, you know, it's like, oh, this is interesting. And I would get it, read it. Most people who buy books don't read them. They start and then they don't read them. And that's really a disservice. Because there's every book has at least one pearl of wisdom in it, whether it's a novel or self-help or fiction, nonfiction, fairy tale, whatever. There's something to be, there's a message. And so reading is a really wonderful thing.
And yes, it is.
I love it and I encourage people to do it. It's like music. It feeds your soul and nature. These are things that really our soul craves, and it ignites your imagination. What I really wanted to keep in mind when I was writing The Healing Moment is I wanted people to feel like I was talking to them. I understood them. I'd been through it and consolidated a lot of information and presented it in a simple form that would help people to feel a better appreciation for themselves. As human beings, we struggle and we try so hard and sometimes we just give up. But I don't want anybody to give up because everybody has a jewel inside of them. Everybody has a gift and it may have gotten lost, but I want them to find it and I want them to be able to embrace it and fulfill that purpose and have meaning in their lives. Because when we do that, no matter what we've been through, it all suddenly it's like, oh, now I get it. It makes sense. And then you can make that contribution.
So I think, so we may have confused some people tonight, which is probably the good thing to do. But now let's take a moment now that everybody's confused and on their journey. And now they're kind of had this realization, maybe they're not expressing their emotions well, or shouldn't be using AI to communicate with their spouse or any number of things that we've kind of crossed off the list of things they shouldn't be doing. So let's take a minute and give them the opportunity, like, recenter themselves in the moment and start to go forward in a better place. So give me some pearls of wisdom on that. I'm going to steal your own line and use it against you.
Well, one of the things that I talk about in the book is to recognize that no one will ever love you more than you love yourself. And if you want love, and I hope that you do, I hope that you haven't given up on it because it hasn't given up on you. If you want love, be the love that you want and you will have it. Because when you go out into the world every day or you wake up with a sense of love and appreciation for your sheets, for your pillow, for if you're on the ground, for the ground, whatever, for the trees, you know, for so much that we don't see and we don't appreciate anymore because we've gotten so inward. We've become so inward in our box, I call it. Take the lid off. And open up and go into the world being love and loving. there's someone who needs you. There's someone close to you that could be your friend, someone you could help, someone could help you. When you're in the traffic and you're frustrated with the way people are driving, try to be compassionate. When haven't I driven like that at times? When you see someone struggling, help them a little bit. Smile at people, ask about themselves. Today I was getting some tires changed and the guy wanted to talk about Biden. I really didn't want to talk about Biden, but I listened and he was in some really wise things to say. And, you know, we just had a nice little encounter. You know, every encounter can be a loving encounter, no matter where you are, but just open up. And once you start being love to people and to your surroundings, you will feel the love that you're looking for. And that is really the greatest message that I'd like to convey in my book and to anyone who's listening to your show tonight.
That is wonderful. That is hard to top. And I'm looking at the time. We still have a few minutes left. I don't know how we're going to. Oh, now, but okay. So you're being loving and being kind and we're trying to forgive people. I still feel like we're missing something. Like there's this piece that just, I haven't put my finger on it yet. Well, what is it? Maybe you already have it figured out for me.
Well, I think you're going to have to get the book and read it. And there's lots of pieces missing.
Well, you said there's seven paths. So if I got loving and forgive, there's five more? No.
Right.
Is that what you're right. telling
and
me?
And there might be a second book after that. So, because oh, I've already no. thought of some that aren't in the book.
Not a second book. No. Not a I guess that always got, oh man, you're jumping me tonight. So I was always asked the author if there's more coming in. You just said there was.
Oh, I have several more books inside of me, some fiction and nonfiction. Yeah.
So let's drag this backwards for a minute though. What made you start? I mean, because obviously you've only written a few so far. So what made you want to jump into that pool of writing books?
Oh, that's so interesting. I really just knew I had to do it. And finally I did. and the first one, I self-published and, you know, I learned so much. Oh my goodness. And any ambitious writers out there, you just must follow your dream and everything else will fall into place. I self-published, through, a press company that really was less than reputable. They kind of went off the name of someone else. I won't mention it on the air, but I trust, here's one of the things I was talking about earlier, trust, you know, I trusted the name of the person they were using as their marketing campaign, and that was a mistake. The person really had no more affiliation with the company, and it had become very, well, let's just say less than reputable. But anyhow, they did deliver on what they said they would deliver, but, you know, I wasn't receiving royalties, and that was a little bit of an argument. But anyhow, I mean, I didn't know anything about marketing, so I was hiring people for marketing, and that's a whole nother sea of, you know, caution. So anyhow, I don't beat myself up for the money I wasted. I learned a lot. I learned so much, and my writing improved. And when I wrote the second book, I actually hired a really good professional editor out of New York who I would be happy to share her name with anybody that's interested. Actually, she's in Connecticut, but I met her in New York. And so that book was so good that it won 23 awards. And I was telling a friend of mine about it. This is why I say write your book no matter what. Don't pay any attention to what you hear about all the people writing all these books and you're wasting your time because you're not. So I was talking to this friend of mine who I barely knew, and she had asked me about the book. And I saw it was doing really well. It won 23 awards. And she said, oh, you know, I have a friend who's a book agent. You should meet her. And I'm like, ah. So I met the book agent, and she signed me up, and she found a publisher for the third book, which is The Healing Moment. And then they liked that. So they said they would publish that. And then they wanted to know if I would revise Exit the Maze, the book on addiction. And I said, yes, of course I will. So they published that also. So this is, and they're doing very well because they have, you know, they have the agreement with Simon Schuster. So it's getting distributed all over the place. We're selling many, many copies. It's very exciting. And I get to be on shows like yours and talk about it and share my message. I want people to be happy. We are not here to suffer. And I suffered for a long time, but I share in the books how to get out of that and how to reclaim your personal power and to be happy and joyous, no matter what's going on, even when you're not. You know, you can be having an experience, and but down deep, you know you're going to be okay, and you still feel at peace because you know that you're in the right place. So the world doesn't have to be for you to be okay. And there's so many miracles that come out of every situation if we open up to them.
Yeah, I always remind myself it's the darkest before the dawn. It's not in the middle of the, it's not midnight when people traditionally think it's dark. It's right before that light pops up across the horizon there, and you kind of it's tough, but there's always good stuff that comes out of this. Okay. And there, if there's any testimonial for your work, it's just you, right? Because obviously you're living a good life and you've followed through with your own actions. I can see it. You're a happy person and turned successful. I mean, not that you weren't successful before. Don't take that the wrong way.
No, it wasn't. You know, I wasn't born with the spoon for sure. I struggled. I was teenage, single mom and, working as a waitress and had to crawl my way out of poverty. It was not a fun, but it was definitely a growing experience. And it's all part of my, it's all part of why I believe in the human being. I believe in everybody who's listening and everyone who wants to be here for the reason they're here. I'm doing what I'm here to do, to help. And I would not be nearly as helpful had I not gone through those kinds of experiences.
So as you look forward, what's the biggest hurdle that people are going to face in the next couple of years with mental health, I guess, just in a broad stroke?
Well, I think the hurdle is the same, and it's always been just more stimuli now, and the hurdle is fear. And so we don't need to be so fearful. This whole thing, you know, anxiety and depression, we don't have to be anxious and depressed. There are tools for that. And it doesn't have to be a pill or pills. One isn't enough. You need one for this and one for that. And you don't need that. What you need is yourself. You need yourself. And my books teach people how to connect to themselves and take their power unto themselves and use their life and their experiences and their gifts. Everybody has a gift, at least one. And to use that to be successful, not just monetarily, because that's really going to happen if you're using your gifts. It's just going to happen. Money isn't the issue. Fulfillment is the issue. And so many people are doing all the wrong things for fulfillment because they haven't tapped into that gift and that purpose. So really, when you do that and you're concentrating on manifesting your gifts and your talents, you don't have time to be thinking about everything there is to be afraid of. You just don't have time for it.
So speaking of don't have time for it, we've got time for the famous last question around here, which is legendary. It's going to throw you for a loop, I can promise you, because it always does. Even people that listen to the show are never prepared for it. What's your favorite breakfast?
I like fresh fruit. I love bacon, real crispy. Yes.
but I love it, so it's okay.
Yeah, so like an omelet, probably my favorite is a really good egg white omelet with real egg whites and Swiss cheese and fruit and crispy bacon.
Well, thank you, Donna. It has been fun and insightful. And when the next book comes out, send it. We'll have to get it back together, and we'll have to do it again.
Thank you so much.
Sure. I don't know if I meant to do that or not, but we're going to do that. Okay, so as Germantown Runner says, we're rapidly approaching the post here. I just wanted to take a minute and thank everybody for joining us this evening. I hope you got as much out of that as I did. Yeah, fun and exciting. So I don't want to say exciting, but that's what we want to do around here. And I hope I'm excited about next week's show. I haven't quite narrowed that. I have got an idea. I've kind of confirmed the guest, but I haven't quite got there. But we're going to get there one way or the other. So that's the goal. So, yeah.
It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report.
Hey, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been a good show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Take a few moments, subscribe, share, all the fun stuff. You know how to do it. I don't have to tell you. Just be ready for next week. It'll be sooner than you think.
Others don't want to see. It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Calafato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.